hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and causing diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my countrymen, you're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on LightResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And I'm going to play the program that we recorded this week. William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, Ken Gilden, our producer and chief researcher, myself, Paul Fromm with the Canadian Association for Free Expression in Canada, and the special guest this week, the host of the Political Cesspool, which has now been going for 15 years, James Edwards. And this is this week's Ethnostate.
Hello everyone, this is William Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of the Ethnostate. And before we ask each of you what's going on, I have some interesting developments in my household. I think I've maybe mentioned in the past that of my children, three are kind of supportive of our views, and two are not my daughter's friends, came over and stayed with us for a few days. And this friend, she was telling one of my other children about our views because she was very supportive. And at the end, this fourth child came up. He says, "You know, Dad, I think you're right. I think all your views, I'm changing my opinions." So four down, one to go. So,
curious. How old is this person?
She's 24, I think 24. It is.
That's about the age, yeah.
Yeah, but she says, you know, I'm really a little bit bitter because now when I went to the Orange County Fair and I see that there's so few white people anymore, and it really makes me uncomfortable, and it makes me a little bit, I'm feeling unpleasant. And she says, I don't like that feeling. So with the awakening comes a lot of mixed emotions. But, you know, so now I've only got one to work with.
I call that the Walmart feeling.
The what?
The Walmart feeling.
And why is that?
Because that's a feeling we get in Walmart. I mean, we're all the white people.
Oh, okay.
They're working. That's where they are, but, you know, customers are all the
I don't know that I've ever been in a Walmart, but maybe it's... Because I'm always working. And I've seen like, videos from TV, and it seemed like all these fat white people riding around on scooters, tipping over, and all that kind of stuff. I didn't know it was also had that aspect to it. But what's happened with you guys? What's going on with you, James?
Oh, what is going on? Well, it's the same old, Bill. I guess, you know, as it goes, the weeks, months, years now blur together as you reach a certain age, and I guess I know that twice as much when I catch up with you guys, but raising kids, working for the Colms, living my best life, you know, trying to beat this summer heat, I can tell you that.
Well, that's what we all need to do. And what about you, Paul?
I'm a plain detective going through various local media to try to find out what our kept press that isn't telling us. There's been a big rash of shootings. Now, compared to Chicago, not that bad, but there have been over 20 shootings in the past 10 days or so, and the chief of police says there's been a real spike. Well, yeah, we know that. And he says, but the problem is gang violence. Okay. What type of gangs? Well, they won't tell us. We had a big blowout last weekend called Caravana, which I think the name explains itself. All sorts of people come to Toronto from all over for Caribbean dancing and topless dancing down the street and all that. Well, needless to say, bang, 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 bang. But the chief of police, Chief Black, says when he was asked, well, what did it have something to do with crowds coming in for Caravana? He said, he didn't want to stigmatize Caravana, and the organizers would have nothing to do with this. Well, nobody said the organizers were out shooting people, but the news reports are always absolutely vacuum. A man was seriously wounded in a parking lot at 3:30 in the morning in an airport hotel. Three suspects were seen driving away. Okay, well, they were seen. Probably the color was seen. We're not told. What was the guy doing in a hotel parking lot at 3:30 in the morning? We're not told. Who was he? We're not told. I mean, I think there is the. I've talked to other people who lived in Eastern Europe, and they claim that Pravda and Izvestia actually had more real information than our prostitute press.
Yeah, I think it's true, but. The readership is waking up because if you look at the comment section, they all know that the media glosses over these issues. In fact, we all know that the term teen applies primarily, or teens primarily, to black youth or minority youth or, you know, non-white youth. But then there was an article recently that talked about teens committing violence, and they were prominent to be white, and they pointed out that, you know, it was white. So they're doing that to show, hey, not all teens, when we use all teens, it's not just applying to that one particular group. Here's some white teens that we call teens, so you can't blame us for hiding the facts.
In the description of suspects, for instance, if the suspects had looked like James Edwards, in other words, a white skinhead, while the fact that they're not mentioned, but you know, it's degrading that people should have to, you know, piece this together, because on the one hand, it makes a lot of people fearful every time you see the group of youth together, you know, like Italian kids or the odd white kids, even a few Orientals. You know, there's no reason to be afraid, at least not in Toronto. They're not going to mug you or shoot you or whatever. So perhaps less savvy people are needlessly afraid. We can't really deal with a problem you can't name.
Well, gentlemen, I know this wasn't on our roster of topics for discussion tonight, but if I may, with the topic being the media and the lies that the media tells, I heard a joke, or I guess read a joke, that said the only people in the country who believe that Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide would write for the New York Times, and so trying to peddle this suicide thing. Bill, I thought, Bill, you were absolutely brilliant in breaking down your the college. Oh, what did we call it? The college financial situation. What was that case? Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman. The college admission scandal. The college admission scandal.
Yeah.
you applied your legal expertise to that brilliantly. Could we ask you to just shed a little bit of your legal knowledge on exactly how this story was supposed to have played out, that secure facility where Epstein committed suicide, as it were?
Well, okay. The most telling comment about this whole story is, in fact, the biggest, I guess, event of this whole thing is that our president of the United States was tweeting conspiracy theories. Our president is out there saying, I think it was Clinton or something like that. That shows that way we have a president that doesn't follow protocol, and he can talk about, you know, of course, he was the one that was promoting the birther issue with Obama. But in any event, the fact that he's out there in front of everyone saying, hey, it might be a conspiracy. Now, he's not coming out saying that, but he's retweeting conspiracy theories. That is the number one takeaway from this. But okay, my thoughts on it is that if you look at Jeffrey Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein is clearly, or I think he was, a psychopath. And being a psychopath, your emotions are different than our emotions. You don't really have feelings for other people. And I think that can also apply to, you don't have those same feelings for yourself, where you and I would have compunction about doing bad things towards other people. He didn't have that compunction. He was happy to go out and recruit all these little white girls. I don't think he recruited any Jewish girls for his sexual encounters. And his friend Maxwell, who was also a Jewish woman, she was doing the same thing. But in any event, he didn't have that same moral compunction or restriction against other people's. So I think he didn't have that towards himself also. So when he looks at the situation, he says, oh, you know, I am in jail for the next 40 years. It's unpleasant. You know, I don't like being in this jail. I don't like having a roommate that is a big old buff weightlifter that's killed a bunch of people and doesn't like me. You know, I think that he would have no fear of killing himself. So I think that the strongest odds are is that he did indeed kill himself because he's of that type of personality. Or if you take like a Madoff, he is a narcissist, pure and simple. And a narcissist would not go out and kill himself because of his soul inner looking and promoting himself. But a psychopath could. Of course, we're talking, if you're talking about armchair quarterbacking, you're that's me altogether, because I don't know these terms so much. But I do believe that the strongest argument can be made that the people in charge of the prison, the guards, were remiss. They didn't monitor completely, and Jeffrey Epstein didn't mind offing himself, and he did it. That's what I think.
And that's a good treatment. And who knows for sure. But on the other hand, you got a guy that's the most well-known prisoner probably in America right now. He's got the fate, at least presumably the fate of all of these politicians and wealthy, well-to-do people in his hands. He's on suicide watch. If you're on a suicide watch, why would they give you anything with which you could commit suicide?
I would. I give him a belt. I give him a rope.
It may have cleaned up the story, but some of the stuff I read just hours after it happened was that the two guards were let off early, and the camera just so happened to malfunction while they were off, and all of this. Who's to say? And it came a day after Bill Richardson and some of these other politicians were implicated. Of course, they didn't do nothing, didn't hear nothing, didn't see nothing. None of these people ever knew Epstein, the people that traveled with him. But anyway, it's an interesting...
We have watched too many movies like The 3 Days of the Condor or all of these things where you have the deep state is nefariously out killing people or to cover things up. And I just don't think it's credible that they could do that and get away with it. But of course, I would love to have them have done that and get caught. That would be great.
Also, along with all the deviant sex and pedophilia and so on, and important people, Epstein, I've read repeatedly on the internet, was also a Mossad asset. And his girlfriend, Ghislaine
Maxwell,
her father, who was a Czech Jew who came more or less penniless to England, and then before you knew it, had this huge publishing empire and then disappeared mysteriously at sea. He was also Mossad. There's some other very weird stuff going on, and I think a lot of important people did not want Jeffrey Epstein either to open his mouth or for these trials to go ahead, because in the 1,200 pages that were released by the judge on Friday, there was some pretty damning stuff against some pretty important people. Epstein had to die. Now, whether he, I mean, I also have trouble understanding how he managed to kill himself in his cell, but okay.
Well, in any event, if you take a look at these high-profile people that were pointed out of what they did, you've got former New Mexico governor Bill Richardson. His last name is Richardson, but he's Hispanic. You have former Senator Mitchell. He's got a white name, but he's Middle Eastern. And then you've got the biggest, worst of them all, you've got Prince Andrew.
Andrew, right. Yeah.
Andrew, who comes from really the most corrupt group of people ever, the ones who destroyed Europe and England, the royal family. So you've got, I would love to have these guys just skewered. I'd love to have Vlad the Impaler take these guys out.
And of course, Bill, Bill Clinton, as my co-host said on Saturday, had enough frequent flyer miles on the Aliva Express that he could have taken a trip to the moon.
Yeah, well,
And also a fellow practitioner of the law, Bill, Alan Dershowitz.
And there was another very high profile, what is it called when you're involved in hedge fund leader. He was also Jewish. So in any event, I would love to have this collapse on everybody, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think we lost our chance. I think that his testimony died with him.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's still enough going on. In any event, it's very sad that of all of our young women were abused by all of these powerful people, and we have to change society from here on out. But in any event, I think that is an interesting analysis. But now let's go on to the topics at hand. And the first topic that we have is about Donald Trump and his approaching other, what is it called, the black voters. So Ken, can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, I'm trying to find it on my website here. I think I lost it. But the story is that Donald Trump is reaching out to black voters. Now, there really is no story here, but the reason I brought this up is for a topic of discussion. Why is it that Donald Trump and, white conservatives in general have such a difficult time reaching black voters? And what are the chances of Donald Trump turning this thing around? Do you think he can actually draw anything of substance from that demographic that will actually make a difference come November 2020?
Well, my thoughts on it is that just because an individual is reaching out to a group of people doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to change his core outlook on life. My father was a very good man, not very well off, but in Eugene, Oregon, they started a black bank. And so he said, I'm glad that the blacks are starting a bank, and he bought some shares in that just to help them out. He wanted to help them, the blacks, get started. But did that change my dad's position? He says, when the hippies were rioting and the blacks were having their civil rights marches in the University of Oregon, he got an M1 and he says, well, not marching down my street. And he gets an M1 on the inside of our door. So he was ready to mow all these marchers down, and if the blacks were going to come down there, he wasn't going to let them. But at the same token, he was happy to go out and help them raise himself up and put money into a black bank, which eventually failed and he lost all his money. But that same attitude can be applied to a lot of people. Donald Trump tries to reach everyone. Now, of course, Donald Trump, we know from his own words, he's the least racist person who's ever lived. But, but still, you know, you can play both sides of the fence and still keep your own, you know, your core values.
Well, all right, here's the thing. I got a good take on that, I think. Number one, we know blacks are going to vote 90 to 95% for the Democratic candidate. And why wouldn't they? They offer more Gibbs. Furthermore, why would Donald Trump really want to actively solicit that percentage of the vote? I mean, blacks make up, in terms of the overall population, in the low teens. I mean, the population is
13%.
13% has been that way for a long, long time because they've worked themselves so much. And they're predominantly located in the South, which Donald Trump is going to sweep anyway, except for perhaps, you know, Virginia and Florida. The only way that upping your percentage of the black vote could really help him that I see is in a place like Detroit, because he very narrowly won Michigan. And, you know, maybe if you get a few more black votes out of Detroit, you could, you know, keep Michigan in play. But, you know, obviously Trump needs to go hunting where the ducks are. He had a good week a couple of weeks ago, and I'd like to get y'all's take on this. You know, he called Al Sharpton a anti-white or a white-hating. That's the first time I think he actually ever used the word white or referred to his base. A, you know, white-hating con man, he called Al Sharpton, which was good. But I think Trump, he hasn't delivered a lot, but he's always had pretty good rhetoric, and he's never been cowed by the media. But when that shooting happened in El Paso, I think he got knocked off kilter a little bit. He referred to, you know, he condemned white supremacy and white supremacy terrorism. Well, I mean, you know, obviously we condemn this murderer for the actions he took, but, I mean, how's he a white supremacist, per se? I mean, we don't know that much about it. Is he a white supremacist because he was concerned about the invasion? Are all people who are concerned about the lack of law enforcement on our border now de facto white supremacists? Because you see that was the moral equivalent that the media was begging him to make, was that this guy was a white supremacist and we condemn it. Well, what evidence do we have that he's a white supremacist? The only thing we know about him is he was concerned about the invasion, which is a legitimate concern. And then, of course, after Trump condemned white supremacy, the media just pounded on him even more. They thought it wasn't good enough. And they went, so not only did it not help him curry any favor with the press, they dogpiled him even more savagely. We actually saw in real time last week the narrative evolved from that Donald Trump is a racist to he is a white supremacist. And with a single voice, all of the Democratic contenders after El Paso referred to him as a white supremacist. Some media, and I'm talking about New York Times, Washington Post, actually wrote that Donald Trump is a white supremacist terrorist, a terror leader, the president. And that's where we are now.
The problem with these pejoratives is they can mean whatever you want them to mean. So you come up with a term, white supremacist, What does that mean? Well, whatever you want it to mean. So if a person is pro-white, not necessarily anti-black, or if it's just white, it's white supremacist.
Well, I have two comments to make on this. First of all, with regard to him reaching out to the blacks, you got to realize that there is collateral benefit for him doing that. He may not need or get so much of the black vote, but he may help turn the tides of some of these leftists or Democrat or center people who would not vote for Donald Trump and say, oh, he's reaching out for the blacks. He's a good guy. I'm not going to pick a Senator Warren. I'm going to pick a Donald Trump. So there may be some collateral benefits from other races for him supporting it. The second of all, Donald Trump, what you just said, I didn't read these articles, but he said that he condemned white supremacy. And everybody else is calling him a white supremacist. And they're using all these pejorative terms, white supremacist. That, to me, is not a bad thing, because we call ourselves a white nationalist. If they've been calling these guys, we condemn white nationalism, if he did it, he'd say that, I don't know whether he did or not, then that would cause me a little more concern, because that is the designation that a lot of us self-describe ourselves.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Bill. The thing is, though, the media uses those terms interchangeably. I believe that they don't really differentiate between a white nationalist and a white supremacist the way we do.
Okay. However, the fact that in the same breath, the New York Times will call Donald Trump a white supremacist terrorist and Paul Fromm a white supremacist terrorist, that's a good thing, because it puts him on par with the President of the United States.
Yeah, and that's something that Brad Griffin at Austin and the Sip wrote. Feel free to call me a white supremacist. You call the President that also. Half the country now including everyone we're trying to reach, are white supremacists, according to the Democrats and the media. The Democrats are doing more to erode these taboos than the Republicans. There's some truth to that.
Mm-hmm. So there's another thing I can see about reaching out to Negro voters. For one thing, Donald Trump has significantly improved their economic lot, the lowest Negro unemployment in half a century. And that's a strong argument.
Oh, a lot has happened here. They seem to have had a brief disruption here in the show. We do have our fun with the internet, don't we? And we're just going to try to get this back up here. Continuing, this is Bill Johnson, the Ethno State, producer and researcher is Ken Givenin. Special guest in the show tonight is the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards, and of course from Canada.
And for somebody who's reasonable, I mean, there must be a percentage of their population that is. That's a good point. And I think what he's also accomplishing is the race hucksters, like the entire Democratic contingent there, are basically going to try to tell Black, Trump hates you, he's a racist, etc., etc. By reaching out like this, he slightly mutes that, and while that may not switch a lot of votes his way, it may somewhat deter people going out angrily to vote for the Democrats, because what would be best for Trump is a low Black turnout. So if a fair number of Blacks think, well, he doesn't think, not really against us, we don't like him, but it takes away the fire. And
I say, well, look, what you and Bill both said is this is a great conversation. I mean, that's right. Maybe it sort of takes away a little bit of their passion to go out and vote against him. I don't think we're ever going to see a guy like Trump get 10, 15, 20% of the Black vote. It may take away some of their vigor. And to be sure, there's nothing wrong with him saying what he's going to do to help Blacks in a vacuum. I mean, there are things that a president can do that will help all Americans. True. But it does become a little silly when the ratio is, 100-0, where you can point where the president said, I'm going to go do this for Black voters, this one, but he's never said anything what he's going to do for people who actually vote for him. So it's a little silly. Yeah. But
if you take a look at Trump historically, I mean, I have seen photographs, and I've lived it. I've watched him in New York City appearing with Don King with his hair that's all spiked up like that, and he's arm in arm with all of these hoods. I mean, Don King was a murderer. He spent 15 years in prison, and he's supporting all of these boxing matches, and he's hanging out with all of these wealthy, successful Black athletes. He has always had an affinity for dealing with wealthy people, associating with successful people and high-profile people, and many of them are Black. So I don't think he's changed his opinion, his attitude, his approach at all. And in fact, I think it underscores the fact that when he was a private citizen, he would do just as many crazy things then as he's doing now. Because they always make fun of a time, he called up, when he was just a young promoter or a young builder, he called up the New York Times or whatever and pretended he was somebody else, and said, hey, Donald Trump is a great guy, and everybody knew it was Donald Trump calling himself a great guy. That's the first we have as president. And so he's still doing that. And then when Obama was president, he said, I don't think Obama's an American citizen. I think his birth certificate is fake. And he was pushing that for years. And so now he's president, and he tweets all of this stuff, like Jeffrey Epstein was off by the deep state. So, that's just his personality, and that's what we need in these ridiculous times. We need to have a president that that is off-kilter, off-center, and isn't afraid to do what he wants.
I'm with you on that. I mean, I love this campaigning style. I love the way he takes it to the media. I mean, 99 times out of 100, he doesn't back down to the media. And in fact, quite the opposite. He doubles down. But they did get the best of him. I think there was just so much pressure on him after El Paso that he waffled just a little bit and did this ridiculous condemnation of white supremacy, which, you know, again, none of us claim to be white supremacists, obviously. I'm not upset that he did that, but he was playing into their narrative that anybody who believes we need to have border security is a white supremacist or a murderer, and there was moral equivalent there, and so on and so forth. But I wonder, Bill, what do you think? How is he going to have these rallies going forward? You know, is he going to John McCain his audience where he tells them to be quiet, you know, if they get rowdy now, if they can't build the wall or send them back? You know, I'm going to be really interested to see.
Okay. I don't think you're going to find anybody outside of prison in New Zealand who's going to say good things about this guy in El Paso. You know, I don't think you're going to have any support here. So what Donald Trump did there was, I think he spoke, you know, he wasn't forced to do that. He spoke what he thought, and he's consistent with everybody in this country.
Well, we're all for him condemning the murderer. We condemn the murderer. I mean, this guy didn't accomplish anything except bring more, you know, red flag legislation, and it just made it harder for the rest of us who are trying to responsibly go about the work
However, you got to realize that everybody in this society condemns the murderer of El Paso because society we live in. I mean, if you and I were back in Viking England or Viking Scotland or Viking we did a raid we attacked Canute over in Wessex, and we just slaughtered them all, women, children, all that kind of stuff. Everybody be hooting out, yay, way to go. So we live in a society where, be it good or bad, murder is condemned all the time. But I think you're going to have that change. We are no longer as enamored and promoting life like we used to be. Just a case in point, there was a recent article, and it said in the paper about a teenager, 15-year-old teenager, was mauled to death by 3 pit bulls. And then you read the story, and the teenager, it was 4:30 in the morning, the teenager was in someone else's backyard, and the pit bulls were all fenced in. And the Mexican that had the pit bulls attacking and killed this black teenage boy, he says, my dogs were doing what they're trained to do. This little black boy wasn't supposed to be in my yard, and he was coming to it. And so decided not to go after the owner of the pit bulls because the pit bulls were in the backyard doing what they're trained to do. But if you read every single one, I want to see, what are these comments going to be? Every single one of the comments said, good. Good for the dogs. One of the dogs, the police had to shoot one of the dogs to get him off this boy. All of the comments say, oh, that poor dog. And they're saying, what is this boy doing in the backyard, you know, breaking in someone's house? So times are changing. Sentiments are changing. We're moving away from the life, a human life is the most important thing in the universe, to, you know, good, he got what's coming to him.
Well, Bill, you said nobody except a fellow in a prison cell in Christchurch would have anything good to say for the fellow in El Paso. Well, I too condemn the killing. But I did, I've been tweeting this out whenever somebody else is going on about this, that the diversity drives people crazy. And that's my take.
None of our leaders are attacking the real problem. They're trying to put a band-aid on and say, oh, let's ban guns, or let's ban automatic weapons, or let's have a higher review process. None of them approach the issue, which is what you say, Paul, is diversity kills. Diversity destroys. And we need our own, what's this show called? That's what we need.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, though. The media never misses an opportunity to advance a narrative, no matter what the ingredients are. So obviously, when you had a guy that presumably, I mean, if we're taking, you know, the media's word for it, that this was his manifesto and he was the one who put in all that, and we assume all this is to be true because, you know, you remember the days you used to have serial killers and they would always be on TV and they would always be interviewed. you know, a white guy, and it happens so rare, it's like, you know, man bites dog type of story. When you have, I mean, we can name them all. There's been, you know, what, maybe five in the last decade that have gone bonkers because of, because they have no representation. And by the way, you know, explaining something isn't endorsing it, but, you know, when you take away representation for white grievances, and you censor whites, and whites have no representation in government or politics or, you know, media, violence is a recourse for some of these people who feel isolated. But the media, of course, we're going to tie this into white supremacy. But in Dayton, it was very different because you had a Satan-worshipping Elizabeth Warren supporter who did the murder up there, so they didn't really go the white supremacist route with him, but rather the narrative was gun. So no matter what happens, they're going to find a way to shoehorn in, you know, their talking points. Up there, we need more gun control. In El Paso, we need, you know, more restrictions against white people.
I noticed that the press wasn't all over Elizabeth Warren to get her to denounce the killer.
Paul, that's a great observation. I don't know if she was ever asked about it at all.
Well, do you think that she wouldn't? Do you think she'd say, well, he's a supporter of mine. I'm not going to denounce him. It's not news. Of course he's going to denounce him. It is news to go after Trump because they're hoping Trump's going to say, I don't think that guy's so bad. So they want to talk to Trump about that. But in any event, one tragedy that we're not focusing in on is that this young man in Christchurch, this young man is El Paso. They're good. He came from good genes. Most of them came from good backgrounds. And they're not going to get married. They're not going to have children. They're not going to provide a wife with a loving husband and a child with loving parents, with loving fathers. So that's a tragedy that diversity has caused to our people, because they feel the only solution, because we're not represented, is to get a gun and speak with their bullets.
I think you're onto something really powerful. I'm still being blamed up here because I published the New Zealand Manifesto with my denunciation of the killing. But I've read that, and I've also, of course, read the much briefer El Paso Manifesto. And one of the things that comes out of the El Paso document is the despair of this young man. He sees no job future. He sees American jobs, manufacturing jobs being shipped overseas. He sees his state being demographically changed and invaded, and no recourse. And that the despair, I think, is a real loss for our people in both cases. These young men should settle down, have a life, and have children. It's sad that this garbage that's being poured upon us has pollution that's being poured into our life stream is damaging a lot of our.
Yeah, there was an article that I read that there was a movie that had come out where I think the liberals were hunting the conservatives, as they call them, or hunting the people that were concerned and killing them all.
Yeah.
And they pulled that movie because of the El Paso incident.
Yeah.
What is going on with our entertainment where that movie's out? And what's going to happen at the very end? Does do the conservatives get all killed and it's a happy ending? Is that what this movie was supposed to be all about?
Well, I did read that it got pulled. It would be interesting to know. But I have a question for you, Bill, another legal question. So, make no mistake about it. You know, Paul, you mentioned something interesting, too, about how you just posted, you know, one of the manifestos of the Christchurch shooter, even to critique and condemn it, you know, you get, the hell comes down on you.
Being investigated by the hate squad.
Right. Well, yeah, right. To have a grown-up, you know, like we're having here. You know, we're having an adult conversation about this. The media, make no mistake about it, the media salivates when they get an opportunity like this. The media, the powers that be, they love it when something like this happens because it gives them an opportunity to ram through more elements of their agenda. But I'm wondering, I mentioned, you know, serial killers of the past, you know, whether it be Gacy or Bundy or Dahmer or whomever. There's always movies of the week. made about them. They were always being interviewed. You know, there was no shortage of content after they were put into prison about what they thought, so on and so forth. These handful of guys, whether it's Tarrant in New Zealand or Dylan Roof, and, you know, the whole narrative about Dylan Roof was so preposterous that, you know, allegedly, and again I say allegedly because the media was telling the truth about that, it'd be the first time they ever did. He allegedly went to the Council of Conservative Citizens website and one time and read an article about, you know, crimes, you know, according to, you know, race, crimes committed by race, you know, FBI statistics, so on and so forth, and that alone caused him to go commit the murder at the church in Charleston. And to this day, the media says he was inspired by the Council of Conservative Citizens to do this. But what we don't hear from are any of these guys. You'll never hear from James Fields. You'll never hear an interview with Dylan Roof. You heard with all of these other killers, this guy in El Paso, I think, will be no different. Bill Wine, you know, these guys were part of major stories. You know, Dylan Roof especially. I think now we're becoming desensitized to it because it happens so frequently. And it's going to happen even more frequently as whites are more and more alienated from society. But why does the media never interview these guys after they're in jail? Are they not allowed to? What's going on there? Because you would think that they would be, you know, yes, the media would condemn whatever they say, but aren't these people, you know, considering the media attention their actions cause, do we never hear from these people after they go to jail?
That's a very good question, and that question alone might undermine one of the major premises I've held regarding the media, because I have thought that they're more driven not by an agenda, but by money. And because people want to read, the populace, the population, their viewership, the readers, they want to read about white on black crime. They don't want to read on black crime. They don't care, you know, they don't care if a black man in Chicago kills another black man in Chicago, but if a white person kills a black person, they want to read that so they get more clicks, they get more news, it'll generate more money. And so that's what I've been coming on for a long time. But that philosophy, that belief, is undermined by the question you just raised, because I would think that everybody would want to read about Dylan Roof's mentality.
Right, exactly.
Now, let me ask you guys a question. James Edwards and Bill Johnson, why not try to get Dylan Roof on your shows? Contact the prison, see what, I mean, I'm serious.
Yeah.
You're going to have a huge rating.
Yeah, that would probably be our last show, I can guarantee you that. I mean, I already know how the media would spin that, but it is interesting, though, because, I mean, horrible
it's
people...
It's a good idea. I would encourage you to try it.
Well, Ken, why don't you show us the way?
Well, I would default to Bill Johnson, because he's an attorney who knows how to get the job.
Well, I think
it's a good idea.
It's like these people go to jail and they throw away the key and are they in solitary confinement for life, because mass murderers, rapists, horrible people are interviewed by the press all the time after they're incarcerated, but all of these white, you know, mass murders, the media has no interest in them, even though their actions have truly brought about very large changes in society, and they go to prison, and they're never heard from again. Are they contrite? I mean, what if they wanted to apologize? I mean, anything. They could say anything. We don't know what their mentality is or what they would say because nobody has interviewed. Why? And I'm asking you as a lawyer, why don't these people ever interview?
Well, first of all, the hurdles to go through to interview one of these people are very high. And
yeah, but I mean, ABC, CBS, I mean, they would think it'd make that happen.
So I don't know about that. You could certainly communicate in writing, but since the communicator is not a lawyer and it's not have the attorney-client privilege, it would all be censored and reviewed. So even the response, the questions coming in and the questions going out could be reviewed by the prisons and be deleted and redacted. So I think that there is a major obstacle for the media to be able to do these interviews. However, I do know what happened, because there was this guy that shot and killed, shot one of the people that were the supporters of Martin Luther King, and he's the one that shot the hustler, Larry Flint. He was a white guy, and he saw Larry Flint and put a magazine out that had an interracial sex on it, so he couldn't find some black guy, so he shot Flint. Well, this guy was interviewed, and there was articles written about him just before he was executed. So that it does happen. I do think that there are major obstacles, but your point is well taken, and that kind of undermines my belief that the media is driven by money not by an agenda. And if they really are not doing it because they want to suppress his speech, then it is more agenda-driven than money-driven. That's a good point.
I mean, you see, AB, you know, exclusive, you know, major network exclusives of the people on death row, and that's not unprecedented at all. But with these guys, I'm just genuinely curious. I'm not trying to make a hidden point. I'm just genuinely curious. With these people who have made so much news as a result of their action.
Well, I think the New Zealand guy, Tarrant, the government would not allow him to do that. But I think that, and this El Paso terrorist, his lawyers won't allow him to do it while he's being on trial. But someone like Fields, who has already been convicted and sentenced, you'd think there'd be a lot of interest in reading his story and article. So I don't know. That's a good point. All right, well, let's move on. Let's move on to another topic, and there's some issues that I want to speak about this. This is the one regarding Sweden. 4 rapes in 4 days. Police say don't go out alone. Ken, tell us all about this tragic story.
This comes from RT.com. I think it was James that mentioned, maybe it was Paul, that sometimes we get the best coverage from the foreign press. But this is Russia Today, and they say a sleepy college town of 170,000 people, Uppsala, I may have mispronounced that, is more usually known for its universities and cathedral than for violent crime. However, police are investigating a series of 6 crimes in recent days. 2 completed rapes, in quotes, took place last weekend, with another attempted rape on Saturday night, and another sexual attack in the early hours Wednesday morning. All 4 attacks took place at night. All 4 victims were walking alone. Police are treating the incidents as unconnected. There are no descriptions of the suspects have been released.
You know,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Uppsala is, you know, obviously an ancient Viking town. I mean, that goes all the way back to the Viking age. And, you know, Bill, a moment ago, that talked about the Viking raids. I can guarantee you, when they had real men in Scandinavia, that kind of stuff wasn't going on, at least not by, you know, these foreign agents, that's for sure.
And I'm sure the culprits were Swedish elves.
The point that I want to make from this is that we all know that Sweden is just moving fast and furious to the great replacement. They're dying out and being replaced by Africans, Middle Easterners, things like that. And I hear in the movement, in the circles that we go around in, we blame the Jews, or we blame that particular mindset of those people that are doing it. But Sweden doesn't have a large Jewish population. Sweden is destroying itself because of its own internal beliefs and ideology. So they can blame no one but themselves for this. No outside influence. You have all of these native Swedes who embrace immigrants, refugees, diversity, to the extent that their girls are being raped, to the extent that their cities are being replaced. And so it is, I believe, a malady, an illness, and a sickness that is prevalent among our people and not due to outside influence.
What is the cure?
That, you know, the critics are always Donald Trump and what nationalists talk about, accuses of dog whistles. Well, I think that's what's going on in Sweden. Sweden is seen as weak and welcoming by these invaders, and what they pick up from those signals is that Sweden is there for the taking. They've been welcome, and at least the government and the political staff have neither the will nor the interest in repelling an invasion. So, why not take everything that's there, and the lame advice of the police, don't go out alone. Instead, we're going to have every one of these people down and deport them or throw them in prison for the rest of their days. I mean, that's too just signals more weakness. You know,
where are the feminists?
Yeah, where are the feminists?
Silent. Apparently, they're not feminists.
Actually, the same type of advice women are being given in Germany, whether it being a advised not to dress provocatively, to wear long skirts, to cover their hair. In other words, to look like a half-Muslim. Outrageous. That there was certainly, I would say, before the Second World War, that would not have fallen. The perpetrators would have been hunted. Well, the perpetrators wouldn't have been there, but had they been there, they would have been hunted down, and they'd have been lucky if all that happened with the big case.
Okay. Ken asked, what is the cure? In order to find the cure, we have to look at the reason Sweden has embraced these policies, the policies of inviting refugees in, of this great displacement. And I believe, and I mentioned this before, the reasons are one, it's popular. For as long as I can remember, it was the popular view to promote civil rights, to beat down on Jim Crow, to help the minorities lift themselves up around the world. That was popular. The cool people in high school, in college, all wanted to promote this globalism, this helping the third world, to give and more and more and more. So the popular belief, popular sentiments is one aspect. The other aspect is that you have our people, we have an innate feel-good effect of sacrificing our own self to promote other people. We think that we feel good. We think it's kind of a misplaced pride in our own feel-good feelings that we look at this interracial couple. Oh, look at this little half white, half black child, or half white, half oriental child. How beautiful you are. We go out and say, oh, how beautiful, what a wonderful family. Tell us all about your family. Extrapolate, expound on that. We feel good for reaching out to our own destruction. And until we can grapple with those two issues, where we make it unpopular and we realize that this feel-good effect is really a bad effect, it's evil, it's destroying everything that we have, it's nihilistic, then we can begin to grapple and we can find the cure. But Sweden is not there yet. The establishment is still pounding down on anyone who comes up and say, hey, this is wrong. And I think that the reason why the feminists are not speaking out is the feminists are caught up in the same ideology. Feminism for the longest time has been popular, so they are feminists. But it's also popular to support all the refugees coming in, so they want to remain popular. Because they're feminists, they are really seeking to be the popularity contest, and they can't condemn Muslims, they can't condemn the immigrants, because that wouldn't be popular. And so it goes from there. That's my philosophy.
What do you like? Yeah, go ahead.
So it just goes back to, you know, pathological altruism and virtue signaling, which we all know well, and whites need to have social acceptance, and right now that's what's socially acceptable, and that's the behavior that's expected of you, and unfortunately, our people buy into that at their own expense.
I think that's these are standards imposed from above. For many it's innate, and I've been to Sweden. And there's a substantial pushback, just like in North America, the cultural Marxist regime in China forces values that, upon us that many of us don't accept. I agree with the bill, but I think in both countries we have to build a larger critical mass of people who can shut off this. This morality, which many people who follow it know is wrong. You know, it's no half decent feminist or no half decent woman could applaud the rape of these four women in Uppsala. I mean, there's just no justification for it. So the fact that feminists feel they have to stay mute is because of an internal conflict they're facing. It's no longer easy just to blame white men. They're the agents of our oppression. Well, that was the gospel of Marxist feminists. But these aren't white men that are raping these women.
I've got a question, if I can interrupt you, for Bill Johnson. Somebody in the chat group just said, we need a white nationalist party. Do you have a response to that person?
Dude.
This is Joel.
Well, Joel, maybe you should check out the American Freedom Party. That's a white nationalist party, and we've got on this particular meeting today, we have a director, we have our Canadian correspondent, we have a former vice presidential candidate, and we have our president's candidate, which one you work in, and we have the chairman. So we have four members of the American Freedom Party right here, and it just goes to show how anemic a job we've done if you don't know about it. But big things are about to happen. I'm going to set up weekly meetings around the nation and even in Canada. That's the next project. We're going to have meetings all over the place, and we're going to start rolling up our sleeves and changing society. But to go back to what we were talking about right now is that I think change is slowly coming. I mean, my parents, we didn't have the problem when I was a kid that we have now. That notwithstanding, my parents made us aware of these issues to a certain extent. And of the three kids in my family, I'm the only one that it took. The others are just as, you know, they're just promoting race mixing. Of course, they have, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I mean, both my brother and sister. My sister, who's just not much older than me, she's a great-grandmother. She's got like 50 white grandkids. So I couldn't blame her. And then my brother, both my brother and my sister all have more kids than I have, and I have five. They're all white. So I shouldn't blame them. But philosophically, they don't think like I do. And if you take a look at my wife's side and her eight brothers and sisters, they, at the start, my wife was the only one that was sympathetic. And now half of them have come around and the others have not. So slowly, incrementally, our views are changing. And maybe it'll change before it's too late, that we can wake up and have a cure.
Well, once you can't run any further from reality, you know, you become a true believer.
The trouble is that so many of our people have embraced interracial marriage. And if you look at every media advertisement, see, they don't want, the advertisements, they don't want to be considered racist by having two white people, a white couple there. So they always have to promote mixed race couples. And at some point in time, there's going to be no more white couples to have white children. But if we can wake up before then, there is a future. Okay, let's move on to the last topic that we can discuss today. And my wife has always followed Tucker Carlson. She says he's the nearest thing to what we believe. And she says also, from looking at the tweets, Tucker Carlson has Donald Trump's ear. Donald Trump pays attention to Tucker Carlson, and Donald Trump leaves the country. He is the most important person in this country for disseminating our viewpoint, even though he's not one of us.
Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the, we won't be doing that tonight. This is Paul.